Hey, podcast listeners, I'm Rick Bennett, host of Gospel Tangents. If you're enjoying the show, I was wondering if you could do me a favor. Please go to iTunes and write a review. It will be important feedback for me, and it will also help us attract more listeners. The more listeners we can get, the more resources we can build. Thanks again for your help, and appreciate you listening. 1984 was a pivotal year in the RLDS Church. It was the year Revelation was canonized, allowing women to receive the priesthood. However, it caused a schism within the church, and many people left the RLDS Church and formed other restoration branches, or in our case, the Remnant Church. We're talking to Jim Van Cannon, a counselor in the First Presidency of the Remnant Church, and we'll ask about his recollections of those events in 1984. And we'll also ask, how does he feel about women holding the priesthood now? Do you think that'll ever happen in their church? Check out our conversation. We probably should talk about, why was 1984 a pivotal year?
Well, wow. 1984 was very much a pivotal year, and it came to its climax in a revelation that was brought by Wallace B. Smith, Burnell Smith. And it was the allowing women to be ordained into the priesthood. That was the kind of the tip of the iceberg of all the different changes and things that were going on. The church was doctrinally changing from probably the mid to late 60s and was going through a transformation. And there were a number of priesthood members who had entered into the church who had different ideas about the doctrine of the church. And to be fair, you know, I believe they're trying to seek Jesus Christ in the best way they understand. So I'm speaking apologetically and hope everyone understands that. I still love a lot of lovely people over there. And just like in the LDS Church, we find many, many lovely people there too. The thing was is they went about changing the structure and the order underneath. And then at 84, that became the pivotal point, where no one could go any further. That it was like, look, this isn't right. We don't agree with this. We can't find. Well, we just couldn't find any doctrinal support for women in the priesthood, basically.
Okay, so it was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. Was that revelation on?
That's right. Yeah, okay. Right. Now, some people had surmised that because WB had not had any male heirs, that was why that was occurring. And I don't believe that's the reason why that occurred. Because there were plenty of others that could have stepped into that role and actually taken that role.
Do you ever see women getting ordained to the priesthood in your church?
No.
No? Would the prophet ever have a revelation that could happen?
We don't believe so.
We don't believe so, yeah. You don't think that will ever happen?
No.
Okay.
Here again, it kind of comes back to one of those things that's so significant in so many different ways. And, that, you know, I've heard all the arguments for women in the priesthood because I was pretty close to it in 84. And I don't believe it was a societal thing that, well, we couldn't, you know, the Lord couldn't bring forth women in the priesthood because the society wouldn't accept it. There were plenty of times throughout history, if you go and read, and even matriarchal societies, you could find that could have occurred, but it didn't occur. And I just don't find any basis for it. It's like women ordained to have children, bear children. You know, thankfully we're not as men. And, you know, and so I think the Lord calls us each to a work that we're to do. And it's not we're trying to hold somebody out one way or the other, because just as you all have sister missionaries, we believe that witnessing to Jesus Christ is everyone's job, to go out there and to promulgate the gospel. There's just the ordinances that they can't perform. So I really miss what the big deal is when it really comes down to that. I think it's much more of a ideological than theological point of view that people tend to move to when they go down the road of women in the priesthood. And I don't know how far you've gone into looking at that, but I think it also gets into relative truth versus absolute truth. So it goes a number of different branches, but anyway, I'll stop.
Well, that's funny that you mentioned childbirth. That's been kind of the LDS position is men have priesthood, women have motherhood. That's kind of the way you feel as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely, yes. And I mean, both are holy and acceptable before God, so I don't understand why you would want to abdicate something like that, which is a blessing and a privilege to have. I mean,
there are some critics who would say, well, the analog to motherhood is fatherhood. Mm-hmm. It's not priesthood. Priesthood would be.
I agree. You could look at it that way. Yes,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. So there are some who say, well, why? You know, if a woman, let's say that her husband is not a member of the church and doesn't have the priesthood, mm-hmm. why shouldn't she be able to bless her children? Is that an issue in your church, or could she? I know in the early days of the LDS church, there were women who laid hands on the sick. Is that something that your church allows?
No. But we do believe that, you know, in James 5:5, where it talks about the righteous prayer prayer of a righteous man availeth much, that absolutely is there. So we believe that, you know, a woman could stand and offer a prayer and someone be healed because of the faith of that woman and the person whose faith. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the elders, you know, going and laying hands on someone for someone to be healed. I wasn't trying to make that a binary in that particular situation. It's just trying to relate it to help them relate that, you know, is difficult.
It was just so funny because I've heard that so many times in our church that women have motherhood, men have priesthood, and
it's like a. And I don't mean this, if I use this analogy, I don't want anybody on this podcast to think that I'm being demeaning in any way towards women. And I'm not going to say anything derogatory, but I'm just going to use an analogy. And I feel that there's a kind of a logic error, if you will, because I believe that there's a, God's word in it is inherently logical. I mean, it makes complete sense, and it has a balance to it, and it is perfect. And it's just like in the past, I could use the logic that, well, God used Balaam's ass, did he not? He did. Okay.
I believe Brigham Young said that was a, that was not literal.
No, well, okay, that's all right. We considered that it was, but okay. But considering that was, you know, he did that. And, you know, and I could stitch from that, and I could also come over here and say, you know, I've got a dog, and this dog is a lovely dog. He knows unconditional love. He's never, you know, barked at anybody. He just loves everybody he meets. He doesn't care who you are. And, you know, and oh, by the way, he happens to be male, so I should just ordain him to the priesthood. Well, does that really make sense? That's the question I want to ask. You know, does it really make sense? Why are we doing this? Are we doing it for the sake of doing it because we can't? Or are we doing it because it's what the Lord has asked us to do? And that's the question I have, is that, do we believe in revelation? Do we believe that God tells us things? I mean, that's what I think it comes down to.
Well, so since you mentioned that, I do say, you know, in the Book of Mormon, it says that, all are equal unto God, male and female,
absolutely,
bond and free. You know, and actually our church recently, you know, we've had some struggles with the race issue, and they actually used that recently to say, look, we, you know,
I saw blacks, that. I saw that very statement, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So there are some who would say, well, look, if men are equal to women, if all are equal unto God, I mean, that's a Book of Mormon thing, mm-hmm. why shouldn't a woman be able to bless her child? Why shouldn't a woman, if her husband doesn't have the priesthood, why couldn't she baptize? Or why couldn't she partake of the sacrament? And I know that would be a heretical thing even in our church, but yeah. But I mean, there's a case could be made based on the Book of Mormon. If you're equal, mm-hmm. you know, we talk about separate but equal. The Supreme Court said you're not, you know, they struck down Brown versus Board of Education. How can you say that women are equal if they can't bless their children?
Okay, but you know, and I can see that argument. And here again, I think it's a logic argument, and that is that when we come down to it, it's like I think the Lord was talking about something a little bit more broader in those terms of us all being equal. He loves us all equally too. It doesn't mean He's happy with all of us equally. I think that's probably, you know, I know I worry about that for myself. But, you know, I think that that'd be just like saying, okay, well, pick you one of the great basketball players of all time that's probably 7 foot tall and saying that I'm equal to him, you know, and I stand at 5'10". Okay, well, we're both equal. So we can both dunk a basketball. We can both do, you know, everything the same, can't we? No, we can't. There's things he's different. So does that mean that then, because what I'm worried about going down this road is that you change the attributes of God when you start to go down this road of logic. Because if I can't do the same things as this other person, or I don't have the same opportunities, then God's a respecter of persons, for instance. I mean, I get where it goes, but it's like pulling on that thread in a sweater. Pretty soon you don't have a sweater, you just have a ball of yarn. You know, it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't really make any sense. And I haven't really found anybody that can really, they're very good at pointing out the outliers in the data, but they're not very good about talking about the mainstream, you know, because paradoxical things, you know, that's something that really the adversary, I believe, likes to do, is make you think that, you know, you've sinned your last sin, there's no hope for you, you can never be forgiven, you're not going to be forgiven, you know, and we all know that's a lie, you know. That's a difficult topic, really, and I don't know that I'm qualified to answer it completely, but I hope I've done a fair job.
All right. Well, let's move on to the other topic. I know a big issue has been, especially recently with the LDS Church, how we handle gay members. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about how you guys handle it in the Remnant Church?
You know, it's a very difficult thing. And here again, we are looking, we do look at homosexuality as a sin. If someone is a non-practicing homosexual, then, you know, that's something that, you know, they can still have fellowship with us. But if they are a practicing, homosexual, it'd be no different than someone who is in an adulterous affair and refuses to repent of that adulterous affair.
Okay. So, as far as children of gay parents, are they able to fellowship with you?
Oh yeah, they themselves are not gay. Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so you wouldn't prevent a child from being baptized if he wanted to?
Mm-mm, no.
Or he or she?
Yeah, right.
Okay. I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Jim. In our next conversation, we'll talk about temples. In the LDS Church, there are more than 100 temples available throughout the world now. Is this an emphasis in the Remnant Church?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, we have a recent revelation that talks about the beginning to prepare for the building of the temple. But we haven't had a command to build the temple yet, but to prepare for that. So no, we do believe in temples, absolutely.
Okay. Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.